happy holiday weekend to all of Turdville. It is another three-day weekend here in the U.S. as we celebrate our Independence Day, if you will, here over the July 4th holiday weekend. If you've been around Turdville long enough, you know that a three-day weekend typically means a conversation with our friend Jim Willie, the Golden Jackass himself. What makes this fun is we do this in the GoToWebinar format for our subscribers. So rather than just simply me asking the questions, this allows all of you the opportunity to ask the questions. Something unique to Turdville, something that makes that whopping $11.95 a month you pay, hopefully, valuable. So with that as a background, before we get started, let me introduce my friend, the Golden Jackass, Jim Willie. He is the editor of the Hat Trick Letter, found at goldenjackass.com. He willingly shares his time with us. Obviously, it's good for his business, and I want everyone to check out goldenjackass.com and strongly consider a subscription there. Jim, my friend, welcome back.
Good to be back. We've been away for, I guess, about 4 or 5 weeks in Memorial Day. Isn't it funny how we have the holidays, and it's more an issue of, well, we got a long weekend, and there's very little attention paid to what are we celebrating.
Yeah.
Memorial Day, it's the fallen warriors in the battlefield, and today it's the independence from England, and I'm afraid both have become total jokes as we have instigated wars where people and soldiers are falling in order to protect the elite's business, especially narcotics, and now we're celebrating independence from England that does not exist. Not since the Federal Reserve was created in 1913, we've become pretty much a financial colony, joined at the hip with the financial conduit. So here we are, another holiday. It's just a long weekend, and who cares why we have the day off? We just have the day off.
Exactly. That's sadly the way most folks look at it anyway. Well, I'll tell you what, my friend, let's just dive right in. Again, for those listening, this is your chance to ask questions of the Jackass that can be pretty much about anything. And if he most certainly will give it a stab. The way you do that is on your GoToWebinar control panel, there is a questions tab. You click the questions tab, and you type in your question, and I relay it to him. I will do that after I get to a couple of email questions, and I will get to the email questions after I ask a question of my own, and I only have one to get to grease the skids and get us started, my friend. You and I have spent quite a bit of time in the calls, even just this year that we've done, talking about Deutsche Bank. But this is not anything new. I've been following it for years. You've been all over this story now for several years. The IMF just yesterday came out and said that Deutsche Bank poses the greatest systemic risk to the global financial system. And Deutsche Bank today, very near new all-time lows in its stock price, today being Thursday. Jim, I'll just leave it open-ended, let you take the mic. What would you like to discuss in regards to Deutsche Bank?
First is their stock price pathway, and the second is their valuation, and the third is their risk. Okay, take a look at their stock price, and you can see that it's following pretty much the layman stock price decline from 2007 and 2008. If you superimpose the stock price, you see that in the next 2, 3, 4 months, we should see the climax event. Okay, that's the first thing. Huge decline in the stock price. The second is valuation. A fellow who did, I don't know his name, but I'm referring to him generally. A fellow did an analysis of Lehman Brothers back in 2007, and came up with a value of its negative worth. And then after the dust cleared, a year or two later, it became clear what their enormous red ink was valued at, how much they were in the hole. And he was able to determine that he was conservative in his methods by a factor of 2.5 to 1. He used the same methods with Deutsche Bank and came up with a figure without the 2.5 to 1, The conservative estimate is that it's worth minus $400 billion.
Jeez. Oh my God.
So multiply by 2.5 and you get exactly $1 trillion. That's what Deutsche Bank is worth. Now, they could fix it by printing $1 trillion, but they couldn't fix the economy, which is the underlying force that produces additional ongoing losses. Okay, what is their significance? In 1998, Wall Street banks forced down Deutsche Bank's throat the acquisition of Bankers Trust. Now, if you're looking at all the various business lines and segments and little subsidiaries and business segments of Deutsche Bank, the one that gets the least amount of attention in press reports is their derivative book. The ones that get significant attention is their trading, their sovereign bond holdings, their credit portfolio, you know, the standard business lines. The one they ignore consistently is a derivative book. And that, like with Lehman, was where the big losses are coming from that are grossly understated because people don't care for accuracy. They don't care about much of anything except how's my mutual fund doing this month?
Yep.
Okay, so the significance is this. Bankers Trust had a nickname in 98 as the Fed's bank. In other words, it was the bank that the Federal Reserve turned to cover its tracks and to fix its risk portfolios and whatever. It was their derivative book. They wanted Deutsche Bank to take it so that the regulatory overview and purview and all their different oversight could be shipped off to Germany where there wouldn't be any.
Yeah.
So Wall Street wanted to operate without any regulatory oversight, and then they eliminated the Glass-Steagall, and then we had the big breakdown. So Wall Street has wrecked the financial world, and their reward was no felenies for $280 billion worth of fines and penalties. No executive went to jail. Complete free reign. Free money, 0%. No problem, no risk, no limit. And no one went to jail. And I have a saying now that too big to fail had a consequence. Save the banks, destroy the economy. Now, we have two different scenarios that could happen. Oh, before I go on, the Chinese apparently are in the room regarding the Deutsche Bank liquidations and pressures and resolution of their intractable situation. So maybe the IMF came out and said that Deutsche Bank's in trouble so they can later blame China for wrecking it all after they entered the room. Now, I think what's happening is that China has said to the Western bankers, we are going to break your back by allowing Deutsche Bank to fail, and we're going to orchestrate its failure just by letting things happen, letting things go. Okay. Now, two scenarios could happen. The derivative book blows up, and their sovereign debt holdings, like for Italian, Spanish, Portuguese government debt, it all goes bad. They have defaults, and all kinds of Western banks start to fail, two or three at first, and then 20. Or you could have it the other way around. They continue to prop up Deutsche Bank, and no failures happen because they keep on putting on these cost-free patches. Yeah. Oh, we'll just put $20 billion there, $80 billion there, $20 billion there, $15 billion there. And it doesn't cost us anything because our money doesn't mean shit.
Right.
Our money isn't worth shit. We don't do shit. We just play paper games. Okay. And under that other scenario, it could be that an Italian bank fails. And the result being that it takes down Deutsche Bank.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I think is more likely to happen than Deutsche Bank fails, which results in banks going down. I think we're going to have an uncontrollable situation with the Italian banks. Maybe the Portuguese banks just aren't big enough. The Italian banks are. They've got something like a 30% non-performing loan rate. I mean, the norm is like under 10. 7, 8. Okay, so I think we're going to have a breakdown, Craig, and it's either going to be caused by Deutsche Bank or Deutsche Bank is going to be one of the big dominoes from something they cannot control like an Italian bank. If you think it's just one Italian bank, you're wrong. It's about 18. If you think it's only one big one, no, you're wrong. It's about 4 or 5.
Hmm.
They're all broken. I think the entire European banking system is broken. The entire British banking system is broken. The entire American banking system is broken. And I really wonder about the Japanese banking system. So there's my preamble.
Jim, as this obviously this idea of Brexit or Grexit or Frexit or Bexit or, you know, any, the euro is doomed at this point, whether it starts in England or not. And that, boy, that would seem to be the death knell for the currency and all of these then derivatives that are linked to the currency. I don't see how this is avoidable at this point. I mean, is it a freight train to zero? I mean, is it how does Brexit and everything else play into this?
Well, to begin with, I think Brexit had a few underlying motives. The first was that they didn't want to be part of the globalist fascist dictatorship called the European Union. These are commissioners who are not elected, paying no attention to popular will. Like, the popular will does not want the TTIP trade union. Popular will does not want GMO foods. The popular will does not want Russian sanctions. The EU commissioners jam these down the political leaders' throats, so the duly elected leaders of various countries in the EU are dictated to on what they will do and how they will follow orders by the dictatorship. Okay, that's the first thing Brexit was. The second was Britain doesn't follow anybody's lead. Britain goes their own way. They're in charge of the world. Where are you coming from? I mean, gosh, the sun never sets on the British Empire. That phrase came into being when it was reflected upon the twirl around the world, the globe, where India and Australia, New Zealand and Singapore, okay, they're all part of our empire. They follow our orders. Since when do the British follow orders out of Brussels? But there's another one. I give some credit to Nefarium. Nefarium, in his website, has some pretty good YouTubes recently. Colorful fellow, but he said this is also a move away from NATO. They don't like the military buildup, the call to war against Russia that no one seems to want,
right?
Except Rothschild.
Yeah, and the U.S.
And you know, why does Rothschild dislike Russia so much? Because he stole their gold and murdered Romanov.
Yeah.
They didn't like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you imagine some European country coming into the United States and killing a president and handing us communism and putting us in the deep freeze for a century? That's what we did to Russia. That's what Rothschild did to Russia.
And we'd remember it 100 years later, too.
And I think the Russians are coming of age. And what you're starting to see now is not just Russia, but the old Eastern empires. Russia, China, Iran, which is Persia, and India, they're coming of age. They're coming together as four legs to the stool, to the table. It's a big-ass table. It's called the Eurasian Trade Zone. But back to Brexit. It could also be that the British decided we don't want to encourage any more influx of human Arab garbage because we don't really want to put our 12-year-old daughters at risk of being raped. This is all part of the Morgenthau plan of dumbing down the continent, bringing in the human Arab garbage, allowing the whole continent to eventually look like Marseille, France, which has a lot of very embarrassing photos of giant ghetto.
Yeah.
That's what you get with Muslim influx. They don't assimilate. Okay, so the British want to go it alone. They don't want to take orders. If they want to do a big deal with Russia, say for natural gas provision and LNG plants, they don't want to go through Brussels with hat in hand, genuflecting and kissing their freaking rings. So they're going to do it alone. If they want to go ahead with China and establish a deeper, further, broader setup of an RMB hub facility in London, the biggest financial center in Europe, they don't want to get permission with hat in hand, kissing the freaking ring in Russia, in Brussels. Okay, so the British want control of trade deals, financial arrangements and contracts, and we're starting to see a lot of very interesting deals. We have now begun to see in a couple of instances where RMB-denominated bonds have been sold through new issuance in London, not for China, but for other countries. The most recent, I think, was Hong Kong, but there was also one from Spain, and they're done in London. London doesn't want to go through Brussels. London and France and Germany worked actively with the Russian military in Syria to help clean out the terrorist element that Langley and the Mossad of Israel have been setting up. It's amazing. I look at the news, and the newscasters cannot say that the British, American, and Israeli project called ISIS is causing a lot of problems in Syria. It's difficult to eradicate all this when it's the U.S. government working with Israel and Saudi Arabia that's behind it all with funding, with arms, and with men as soldiers. So it's very difficult to clean it up when we're running it under the covers, when we're running it in secret manner. Okay, the British are going to be in more control of what they do, but I'm looking to see, Craig, a backlash where the European Union basically slams the door and says no member nation can have an exit referendum. They don't mean anything. You can't do anything about it. Just like Merkel in Germany said, we have no constitutional provision in Germany for exiting.
Right.
We're in this permanently. That's what I'm afraid is going to come.
That's what'll be next. Jim, if I might, excuse me, I've got all these questions piling up, but I want to, before we get to them, I want to double back.
I'll make the answer shorter, okay?
Well,
but Brexit was important. Okay, but go ahead. I'll make them shorter.
I want to double back to where I interrupted you earlier, though, and we'll wrap up with Deutsche Bank, because when I so rudely interrupted you, you had mentioned that was your preamble, which by definition would mean you've got more to say. So is there anything else you wanted to inform us regarding what you've heard, what your global contacts have told you? Anything else you want to talk about regarding Deutsche Bank before we keep going?
No, not regarding Deutsche Bank. There are a couple of other very big things, though. I'm hearing that there's some very high-level negotiations between China and Basel, Switzerland, over converting international contracts written in dollar terms and forcing them through a global treaty in such a way that they will be converted into gold payment terms. That will pave the way for the U.S. dollar to be broken away from the U.S. domestic currency status. And the negotiations are very high level. The Chinese officials and the Basel Bank for International Settlement officials, which represent the central banks of the Western world plus Japan, that slave state. And the beauty of this meeting is that it will enable the U.S. to create its own currency, and we will finally get some justice and a sought-for equilibrium where the $500 billion annual trade deficit will become a factor again toward devaluation of the new dollar, what I call the Scheiss dollar.
Nice.
But in terms of gold, they cannot do this, Craig, without establishing a clear conversion, like, say, Bolivia selling industrial metals to China for finished electronic goods and motorcycles. Okay, you've got to convert the dollar terms to gold terms, and they're talking about a $5,000 gold price.
That even seems
low. Right. International contracts. Or, for instance, India, with a healthcare system and information technology arrangement with Saudi Arabia, written in terms of a $1 billion contract. It's not going to be settled in dollars anymore. This is what's coming. It's not ready yet. They need to convert the dollar contracts for bilateral two-nation contracts, not involving the United States. They need to convert it to gold for the payment system, the payment structure, settling on the contract, no longer in the dollar. And they're talking about a $5,000 gold price. Okay, the second big point in the preamble is that Greenspan's talking about gold. I don't like it. Since when is the architect of this failure going to tell us about the solution? My guess is that his solution is part of a complicated scheme to allow Basel, Switzerland to be the repository and global central bank for an international currency that I suspect is going to be a gold backing, an attempt toward a gold backing of the IMF SDR basket, the special drawing rights of the dollar, the euro, the pound, and the yen, now add the Chinese RMB. I think they're going to try to work out a deal where the SDR basket is backed by gold, but very limited provisions for redemption. In
Course.
other words, same old system, same old paper gold. And if you go to Basel and say, look, we got a lot of these SDR gold-backed bonds and we'd like some gold, they're going to be told by Basel, go back home or we will kill you. Just like they do now.
Just like we did,
Okay.
just like the US did to the French in 1968.
Yeah.
19
And you know, there might be legitimate gold demands, and they're going to be told, don't worry. In order to protect the gold, it's going to stay in Basel, Switzerland. Go back home and contribute to the system. It's all good.
Yeah, right.
And we're going to hear then later about controversial things about the gold being rehypothecated, about countries pitching in their gold to BIS to participate in this more fully. And I ask the question, where are we going to see the gold trade notes? Because this is where the Eastern control, Eurasian Trade Zone, the BRICS nations and their alliance, the emerging market nations, their control lever is with trade. Trade payments, ships loaded with finished goods and materials, heading for the Western ports to be paid for by something, and they don't want treasury bonds anymore. They want gold trade notes, and we got just enormous things coming as part of the reset. Okay, that's the end of my preamble. Go ahead with the questions. I'll try to make the answers short.
All right, my friend, I've got two that were emailed to me ahead of time by folks that couldn't join us. I've already got eight in queue, but that's fine. Anybody, again, this is your chance to directly interact with the golden jackass, asking just about anything that you'd like to ask him. Jim, let's start with the question I got from Jay Quest, emailed to me back on Tuesday, as a matter of fact. He was so excited. And he said, my question is about Turkey's sudden change of heart with Putin. Now, let me add to that. This was before the Ataturk International Airport attack, which today has now been blamed magically on Russians and Chechens. Imagine that. Okay, anyway, I'll just open it up to you. Again, his question is about what is behind Turkey's sudden change of heart regarding Russia slash Putin.
Destroyed Turkish economy. This isn't complicated.
No.
Their hotel industry is down 90% in business.
Explain that to
Their
people.
biggest
Jim, explain that to people. Yeah, about the amount of Russians that vacation in Turkey. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
okay, they have a few hundred thousand a year. Turkey, I guess they forgot about that when they shot down the plane. And they probably shot down the plane, what was that, 6 months ago? I think they shot down the plane on orders from Washington. Because we're trying to provoke a war with Russia. And what better way to do that is with someone who's not American?
That's right.
You do it with a Washington puppet. Okay, so you've got a huge hotel industry in Turkey. I saw pictures. This was back in, I guess, around October, November. I showed a couple pictures in my hat trick letter report of totally empty lakeside, I mean, this is like Mediterranean Sea, seaside hotels, empty. Empty. They've wrecked their hotel industry. It's not the only thing they wrecked. They wrecked all kinds of trade. I mean, we're talking about agricultural goods. We're talking about a lot of different things. Turkey is not a real primitive economy, but it's kind of backward. I'd call it second world, equivalent with, say, old Poland and old Czechoslovakia, old Hungary before the Iron Curtain went down. But I think here's what's going to happen. We've already seen a positive effect. I heard TurkStream is now back on. The big Gazprom pipeline is back on. They're going to continue with the construction for the Gazprom pipeline that will service southern parts of Western Europe. Also, here's what I think is going to happen regarding Putin. I could go on for 20 minutes about a lot of scummy details regarding Turkey, but I'd rather not. They're in charge of the human Arab garbage influx.
Right.
I think Putin, let it be known that if you don't back down and work toward peace and olive branch and commercial exchange in a constructive manner, we're going to destroy your entire economy. And Turkey decided, yeah, okay, we're starting to see that in a big way. All right, so Putin is going to make sure that Turkey does not get in the way for any passage of Russian ships. The U.S. Tried to get Turkey to block the Russian ships, but that just didn't work. You can't do things like that. Whether it's a cruise liner or a commercial vessel or a military vessel, you can't do that. Okay, but I think later on, in the next following months, Russia is going to make sure that the next leader, past Erdogan, is going to be a pro-Eastern leader, and Russia will therefore capture Turkey with the Eurasian trade zone and watch them fracture off from NATO.
Exactly.
It's a process that's already begun.
Jim, if I might add, this is something I've followed closely for almost 10 years. I don't like Erdogan. I've seen him dismantle all that Ataturk put in place. That pre-Erdogan Turkey, I mean, made sense for them to lean west and try to get into the EU. But Erdogan has done everything he can to dismantle that and move it to the east. And so it always surprised me that they were kind of playing along with NATO and going against Russia. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it's logical. I mean, this is just a logical, not like we're not talking the next weeks. I'm talking over the next coming months and years that Turkey leans that way instead of Western. And clearly what you're describing fits right into that.
Let me just give you a simple example. This could have happened 8 years ago or 10 years ago or 15 years ago. We're going to have a big shipment of tanks and military weapons for the Incirlik Air Force Base and planes, and we're going to give a nice big fat kickback of $200 million for you, Erdogan, and all your buddies. Are you our friends? Oh, yeah, we're our friends. What accounts are that? Are those $350 million going to be showing up in? Okay? And if you think this is poppycock, you're dead wrong, because the European Commission, just a few months ago, issued a $3 billion grant to the Turkish government for managing the Arab human garbage influx.
Yep.
Okay, $3 billion. I believe that was a retirement golden parachute for Erdogan and his family, which are deeply involved in narcotics and black market oil sales with ISIS.
All right, then let me use that as a segue to the second email question because I think it works out pretty smooth. This comes from Chris, who says, Jim, do you think more countries will exit the EU and we will see the end of NATO? And then, as a second question, he says, what are the chances of Merkel being ousted as German chancellor?
I think, I've given this a lot of thought just in the last 2 or 3 days. I don't have all the answers, Craig, but I have some suspicions, and my little Sherlock Holmes type nose has been proven to be pretty good, not perfect. I think what's going to happen is the EU is not going to be broken up. It's going to be ignored. Germany, for instance, right now, I got this from some well-connected German clients. They're involved now with significant talks at 80 different tables between German industrial leaders, like executives of Siemens or whatever, I call them the industrial captains, and Russian representatives, whether they're from the Kremlin or giant state-owned corporations, like a giant aluminum company of Russia. Okay, they don't have shareholders and board members. They do in a certain way, but it's different in Russia. So what I'm hearing is 80 different points of contact between Germany and Russia to reestablish things and to reverse the damage from the sanctions. Okay, does Germany need to exit the European Union in order to continue with Russian trade deals? No, they just ignore the sanctions, which means they're ignoring and thumbing their noses at the European Union Commission. Will there be votes in France and Netherlands? I think yes. But I think we might get a desperation move by the Brussels Commission to say exit is no option. So the member nations are going to say, fine, we're not going to participate in your trade union, the TTIP. We're not going to participate in your rules for GMO labeling for foods. We're not going to participate with your Ukraine war, sending troops or whatever. Military supplies. We're not going to participate in your Russian sanctions. We're going to ignore everything you do, and we're going to stop making our tax payments to Brussels. No one much is talking about the tax payments to Brussels. They've got a whole hierarchy of Minister of Trade and Minister of Security, Minister of this, a staff of 20 people, all highly paid from the taxes that Britain doesn't want to pay anymore to Brussels, and neither does France, and neither does Germany, and neither does Italy, and neither does Spain. These countries don't want to pay. So what we're going to see, Craig, is the EU ignored until it comes down to not paying the taxes. It's going to get quite interesting because the ignored policy will happen first. The Germans just signed Nord Stream 2, a giant Russian natural gas pipeline system to feed the giant German LNG facilities, which supply the giant industrial centers of Germany. Germany has said, pretty much, when it comes to energy provision, we're not paying any attention to your sanctions. We're going to get widespread ignorance of the EU, and I don't really care if France breaks out from the EU, if they set up a lot of different contracts and trade deals and shipping, ship construction deals like Mistral with Russia. Who cares about the Union if it's ignored? Who cares about what Washington says if every state goes its own way? It's the same thing, Craig.
How about the NATO part of the question, Jim?
Okay. NATO became a really ugly thorn about a year ago. We were 1 year into the Ukraine war, and the supreme commanders were giving way too many orders from NATO to member nation states, their presidents' offices, and their security ministers and all that apparatus. And it became clear that the NATO supreme commanders were more important than the prime ministers and presidents of the member nations, and they did not like it. So they backed off. NATO backed off. And now I hear reports, but I can't get them confirmed. I'm really not sure about it, but I'm hearing that there's a significant removal of military hardware from NATO bases. I don't know exactly what's going on. I expect NATO is going to break up. The big first crack took place, Craig, when about 6 months ago, when Russia decided we're going to go in there and clean up the terrorists in Syria that the United States just can't seem to get a handle on because they are part of it. Germany and France were first in line to join up with Russia to clean out ISIS in Syria, and Britain did the cowardly little thing that those faggot leaders usually do, and that is to say, well, we'll help France, but don't tell anybody. Now you've got Turkey, and they're extending an olive branch to Russia. They're not going to fight any Russian battles. So NATO is getting orders from the Pentagon to go ahead and provoke the bear of Russia, and Turkey turns around and doesn't attack them, but says, we're sorry. Turkey's not going to attack Russia. They want the tourism back. They want the trade back. Russia is turning out to be a significant agricultural exporter, and they now have become number one exporter of wheat. So you think maybe there's going to be a bread shortage in Turkey, or is it already here?
Yeah.
NATO's going to break up again, maybe not so much from formal departures, but from actual lack of interest. The big key for me is the Ramstein air base in Germany. I'm hearing that has a significant reduction in war military hardware. And I'm just looking to confirm that. I hear it. Can you confirm that? No, but that's what we're hearing. Can you confirm it? No, that's what we're hearing. Very hard to confirm these things. I think some of them are just being sat on. All right.
I stopped because I thought you were going to say more. That's it?
No, I don't know anymore. I think that to have a NATO supreme commander give orders to member nations in Europe with duly elected presidents, prime ministers, parliamentary leaders, ministers, to be given orders by the Pentagon is very offensive.
Yeah.
Especially when they're moving troops to the Russian border and the member nations don't want it.
Yeah.
We're trespassing.
Like we are in...
The international order, Craig, the international order has permitted in the last 10 or 15 years the United States to go in and trample and trespass in nations under the guise of searching down to destroy terrorism when we're responsible for it. And the European nations don't want it anymore.
Gotcha. All right, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, about 11 questions in queue, and we've
got about
50 minutes. So, and I'm sure we're going to get a few more. So you ready? We're going to rock and roll, and
yeah.
You know where these are going to come from, and you can just pick them up and run with it. Again, anybody wants to ask a question of the Jackass, we'll try to get to it. Click the questions tab on your GoToWebinar control panel and type it in. The first one, this is kind of timely in that as we've been talking, Mr. Carney of the Bank of England has said that there'll probably be some monetary easing this summer just to try to keep things calm, which has, of course, spiked the stock market, has a number of things. So Larry wants to know. He says, now, I think Larry will know what my answer to this question is. It's going to have a lot to do with the yen. But Larry wants to know what your answer is. Won't precious metals, paper precious metals, go down as money flows into equities with the next Fed rate cut and further QE?
I don't think so. Not much this time. We're starting to see lost faith and confidence in the entire QE process. We're starting to see some rather significant cracks in the U.S. Treasury bond market. We're starting to see some rather large strain going on between the Treasuries and the German bunds, between the U.K. gilts, that's the sovereign British bonds, and the German Bund, the sovereign German bond. These cracks and these strains, what they're screaming is that QE doesn't fix anything. So if we see that they're going to be loading on QE with some repair of the damage to the stock markets in Britain and Western Europe, what you might see is even more movement into gold, because something seems to have broken in just the last couple months. We saw the move over 1,300 following the Brexit vote for gold. Now it's 1,320, give or take. And I made a correct call. It kind of surprised me. I said, well, you know, give silver some time, and it'll break out over 18. It's just a little behind gold. And for a while, we had gold behind silver, because remember, silver, following the Shanghai announcement in April, silver made a move toward 18 and backed off and consolidated in the 17s very nicely for a whole month. That was great. So I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of applause. Oh, the central banks are on the job, all is well, when the conclusion has been recently, the central banks are causing an enormous problem.
Right.
I think the central banks, Craig, are being identified as part of the problem, not solution.
I mean,
and the battle between Germany's banks, the German Bund, the Bundesbank in Germany, the Central Bank of Germany, and the Euro Central Bank with Prince Draghi, that battle emphasizes in Europe that the central bank is not the solution; it's part of the problem.
You know, and I might add too, Jim. I mean, what are they going to start buying next? I mean, is the Bank of England and the ECB going to go down the road of the Swiss National Bank and the BOJ and just start buying equities because they bought?
No. They've already announced it, Craig.
They're buying
corporate bonds.
Well, okay. They bought so much debt, Jim. What are we up to? $14 trillion in global debt that is now negative? And negative rates is the key, to me, the key driver of physical gold demand at this point. So, I mean, I don't see how a more QE somehow translates to lower gold prices.
I don't either. And I look to see what are the central banks focusing on? They've wrecked the sovereign bond market. Now they're turning to the corporate market. They're going to wreck that too. Okay, it's becoming evident, Craig, the central banks and their quantitative easing and their bond purchase and their monetary creation to cover bonds. It is part of the problem. And if they want to cover now corporate bonds, I think the message is quite clear. The whole system is breaking. We better hurry up and buy our gold and silver, because the Fed and the Euro Central Bank are expanding their coverage, and they haven't fixed anything. They're wrecking everything.
Yep.
That is going to become a more pervasive, I think, sentiment.
All right, the next question from Dan, who simply asked, does Jim still think? It implies that you used to think, but do you still think that pre-2009 Federal Reserve notes will be more valuable than newer ones?
I don't know. Maybe. I don't think that's a real critical question right now. The bigger question is whether the dollar is going to be rejected at port facilities as payment for trade shipments. That was a kind of a neat question that I posed a couple of years ago or 3 years ago. It's not on my radar right now. A much bigger superimposing question has come: will Treasury bills be rejected at port facilities? And they're not going to. Okay, this is a basic point. It's much less important the quality and integrity of an individual bill with a serial number and a marking on it than the quality of the Treasury bond that is its trading vehicle. So much more important to Treasury problems than distinctions of a $20 or $100 bill.
Okay.
Much more important whether the dollar will go away because Treasury bills are rejected and not suggested for crude oil payment. We're still approaching the date when the Saudis say, yes, we'll accept RMB for oil, Chinese currency for oil. We're coming to that point. Okay, not a really big issue for me, this pre-09 and post-09 dollar distinction.
Fair enough. All right, next up from Jay. Again, now, Folks might know already how I will answer this, so I'm just going to ask you the question and be quiet because they don't want to know what I think. They want to know what you think. Jace asks, if bullion banks can keep being funded by the central banks to suppress gold and silver, and no one is willing to break the COMEX or the other electronic exchanges, how will gold and silver make a true bull run through price discovery?
I think it'll be through premiums paid. If the COMEX and the LBMA just don't ship sufficient volume to meet the demand, you're going to get bids, bids, bids. They're not going to get shipped. The COMEX doesn't ship gold anyway. All they do is move things around in their accounting ledgers.
Yep.
And block the door for anyone who wants a delivery on the ramp. I think we're going to eventually see other venues have a different price of gold where they actually deliver it.
Right.
And I have said this many times. I don't care what the COMEX price is. Of course, I'm looking at it now a little bit more because we got the Brexit vote and we had the Shanghai phenomenon come in April. I just want to, for curiosity, if we move up to $1,400 for gold pretty soon, because where they don't deliver the gold, it might be very funny that their price has risen even though they don't deliver any gold. They're not a gold market. So what's the non-gold market showing for a non-gold price? That's amusing to me. I'm starting to hear more and more differentials between the Shanghai price and the London price. We're starting to hear more premiums being paid in order to get an actual delivery. So look for these stories to increase. I have an expectation in the next several months or year that we're going to see a number of different gold prices posted, and they're not going to be the same. They're going to differ for where gold is delivered.
Right.
In other words, they're going to differ for where there's a real gold market. And the COMEX, I think eventually, this is going to be a little funny, eventually the COMEX might announce that we're not going to post the gold price right now. We're having some technical difficulties.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I fully expect we're going to see a dark period where for 10 or 10 days or 2 months, there's no gold price posted. Maybe it'd be 3 days. I don't know. But then we're going to see a price in St. Petersburg, a price in Moscow, a price in Zurich, a price in London, a price in Hong Kong, a price in Sydney, Australia, a price in Singapore, a price in Panama, a price in Dubai, and they're going to be all over the place, and the lowest ones are going to be in the Anglo-American system where they don't deliver gold.
Right.
And then you're going to just see the COMEX say, we don't sell a gold contract anymore.
Right.
They're going to become irrelevant just like the EU.
There you go.
There you go.
All right, next question from Eurobuddha. And Eurobuddha says, what does Jim think of platinum? It's about $300 discount to gold, which is rather unusual historically. Will platinum catch up?
It probably will. Let me tell a little side story. I had a conversation with a couple of guys who reported to me to say that they were sitting in on global collateral accounts conferences. And one question I asked them, okay, I've got this 90% credibility of what they're saying. I don't want to say, oh, I believe every word they said. I don't also say these guys are full of shit. Instead, I say, this sounds about 90% right. But you don't really know what the 10% is, so it puts a little bit of doubt in a lot of things. But the general spirit sounds right. I asked them, are gold and silver going to be the monetary metals for any new international accord that comes about through the global currency that your conference purports to be centered upon? And he said, there's a lot of talk that it's not just going to be gold and silver, but it'll be platinum also, but nothing else.
Yeah.
No palladium, no rhodium, no nothing. No rare earth metals, no strategic metal like vanadium and strontium. No. Gold and silver and maybe platinum too. For me, anyone who plays around with platinum and focuses on that is missing the big play, and that's silver.
Yeah.
Just focus on silver. Don't worry about platinum. You might be right on platinum, and you might not. And if you're not, you're just not going to see the big payday. For silver, the payday for me is 100-to-1 odds in your favor.
I want to continue down that road with silver, because the next question from Brent is, and you're answering it, and I want to put it in there so make sure Brent hears we're asking it. Will silver along with gold, do you ever hear that silver will be included with gold in this new next international monetary system? So anyway, keep going.
I hear it every time there's anything spoken about the international monetary system to come. The redesigned monetary system will be gold and silver. It's that simple, gold and silver. And the ratio is going to move down to something like 20, 25 to 1. So if they're talking about a $5,000 agreed upon by decree, an agreement, contract, international contract between Basel representing the central banks and China representing the Eurasian Trade Zone, emerging market nations, BRICS Alliance and all, if they're talking about a $5,000 gold price, divide by 20 and you get 250, divide by 25 and you get a $200 silver price. Works for me.
Would gold even trade at that point, Jim, if the major international, you know, the banks, the central banks, if they all set a price, it's almost like we're back to what 35 was 50 years ago. I mean, will gold even trade? Will they try to enforce that price through a Basel gold pool like they did the London gold pool? I mean, how do you envision that playing out?
I envision that in that perhaps for the last few months, a lot of big Western banks have already been loading up in gold and perhaps silver, already accumulating, not for a banker stockpile, but for banker reserves. That's the proper term for it. I believe that we're going to see this move toward 5,000 gold after the banks load up, so that the banks will be a principal beneficiary of the reset and suddenly find themselves recapitalized.
Yeah.
The banks aren't going to get in the way. They're going to make sure it happens because they see it as inevitable, and they're going to exploit the situation.
And
the silver price has to go up. Just go ahead.
No, I just was going to add as context, when we talk about the banks, what's the most important bank in trading precious metals? JP Morgan. Of the, just as an example, of the massive amount of alleged deliveries in June, that is more than the last 9 months of COMEX deliveries, JP Morgan stopped 60% of them to their house account and their customer account. In silver, JP Morgan didn't even have a COMEX vault 5 years ago. Now their COMEX vault is more than half of the total silver in the vault. They've got a monopoly, if you will. So anyway, it may not be banks. It may just be bank that prepares itself for what's to come. Anyway, go ahead, Jim. I just wanted to throw that in there for everybody.
Well, let me add a rejoinder to your JP Morgan point. It could be that JP Morgan is a facilitator for gold and silver accumulation by the big Western banks.
Yep.
And it could be that China has told them that that is the role they must take. Remember, China took over the JP Morgan headquarters,
yep,
owns their gold vault.
Yep.
Why would they do that if they weren't going to give them orders? I think one of the big phenomena in the last few months regarding JP Morgan is they appear to be the agent for China to replace the Chinese silver stockpile. That's what I think is going on. And JP Morgan is so clever about this. They're using their copper accounting, pardon me, they're using their copper accounting, and they're mixing it in with their gold and silver. you can't trust much of any of the accounting data from JP Morgan. Because if they do accounting fraud, so what? They're allowed to. They're the U.S. government.
Right.
Now, I think that there are some very big issues regarding silver shortage that must be addressed. You can have this 400 or 500 to 1 paper gold claim per ounce of physical, but it's really not in heavy industrial demand. It's not true of silver. We're over 40 or 42 for the paper silver futures claims per ounce of physical silver, when it's got a very huge industrial demand led recently by silver powder on photovoltaic, the solar panels. Japan is now lining up enormous contractors for silver powder, which is used in the panels for solar panels. Okay, you have this huge ratio now of silver paper claims to physical. This is much more important than gold because it's got industrial demand. You also have U.S. and Canada, just for coin demand, a 33 million ounce deficit relative to the U.S. and Canadian silver mine output, and that's just coin demand, ignoring all the industrial demand. You have gigantic silver deficits in place.
Right.
And then on top of everything else, there's no longer any silver recycle going through the intermediary hands. There's a premium paid for scrap silver. This never been seen before.
Jim, I would just add for everybody, back on your point about the banks being ready and coming out ahead, maybe the point that we need to make, you talk about what was ICBC or whomever it was that bought JP Morgan's vault and headquarters in New York. And then we also had the Deutsche Bank vault get bought. And what was it, the Barclays vault? I mean, they bought two huge vaults in London too. Maybe it is the Chinese banks that are well positioned, and they will be in position to rule the world. It'll be the Chinese banks that win when you talk about.
No doubt. But they're going to be influencing some Western banks and telling them, you're all insolvent.
Yeah, right.
You need to do something. You need to do something about this. Climb on to gold, make it a reserve asset, buy it up, do it all in secrecy, line it up with the Basel Central Bank of Central Banks. Get ready, because we're going to burst on the scene a $5,000 price and just kick your tables over.
Maybe they'll just...
The Chinese might be the big beneficiaries, but I think they're convincing a large following.
All right, I got about a half hour to go, and I've got 7 or 8 questions here. So again, if you want to get in on the action, type it in the
control
panel. This is a follow-up, so again, a good segue. This comes from Seamus. Again, I'd have fun answering this myself, but I'm going to let you do it. Why? This is in the classical Keynesian sense. Seamus asked this question. Why would China want to have the strongest currency in the world? Why wouldn't it crush their exports and crash their banking system via their enormous debts? Let me just add, there's a reason why Secretary John Connolly is still quoted as saying, describing the reserve currency status as an exorbitant privilege, and that the dollar might be our currency, but it is your problem. If you are the reserve currency, you get to have that exorbitant privilege, regardless of whether it makes your currency strong or not. But anyway, Seamus has that question of you, not of me. Why would China want to have a strong currency, Jim?
China is the rabble-rouser, organizer, Pied Piper. I don't like Pied Piper. That implies they're going over the cliff. China is the designer of this gold-backed currency. But notice they have not announced a gold-backed RMB. They want it, but they've not announced it. To me, it's crystal clear why. They're going to get a legion of followers with other gold-backed currencies, because they realize one of the jackass points of reality. If you don't have a critical mass, a large number of members at the table to use or have their own gold-backed currency, you're going to sink your own economy from the strong currency, just like Seamus said. So my theory is that China is trying to organize a critical mass of all the emerging market nations, all the Eurasian trade zone nations, all the BRICS alliance nations to climb on board, sign up for this system, and when they get above 75 or 80% of the global economy as being in support of this system, they're going to say, it's a go. And then all the other, you know, the 20 or 25%, United States, Canada, England, parts of Western Europe, they're going to be left out in the cold. Okay, if you don't have a critical mass by China and, say, three other countries, they launch a gold-backed currency. They all use the gold-backed RMB. The gold-backed RMB goes up double. They lose their export trade, and the West goes, ha, ha, ha. Now, turn it the other way around. China and three or four nations are joined by 80 others. They announce usage of the gold-backed currency system in trade payment, maybe by means of the gold trade note that I've been describing. Then you've got the 20 to 25% outsiders, U.S., Canada, England, and Western Europe. In other words, the English-speaking world plus their minions. They're not going to be saying, ha, ha, ha. They'll be looking at a currency devaluation sequence and massive price inflation. So the benefit of having a critical mass by the gold currency developers and adopters is that they will be calling the shots, benefiting from the situation where the Americans and all their minions, U.S. and their minions, will be the losers with currency devaluations, and their economies will start to look like Venezuela, and nobody will be saying, ha, ha, ha.
Right.
The critical point is that China is trying to develop a following to make a massive critical mass. And I think it's got to be 75 to 80%, Craig.
Fair enough. Next question comes from a Japanese turdite, or at least someone, a turdite that lives in Japan. This is specific to the yen. And, you know, obviously Abe and Kuroda have been working hand in hand to weaken the yen and print as much as they, what do they own, half the Japanese equity ETFs at this point? I mean, it's, how much more can they do, basically? Raka wants to know, will Abe come out of his election stronger? Will that make Kuroda more powerful? And will they succeed in weakening the yen again, which obviously would have an impact on paper gold prices if they did? What do you think of the yen going forward?
Well, let me start with Abe. Abe has done something that the American, the Washington neocon Nazis don't like. He's been making nice with Putin. He's been having three or four meetings at the state level with Putin and Russia. They've come out with an agreement not to fight over the disputed islands. They're trying to make an agreement where the Russians can make a naval base, but the Japanese can retain ownership in certain ways, maybe lease property. And I don't have all the details, but the point is that Abe is pissing off the U.S. government by not going to war with Russia. They're working out LNG deals regarding Sakhalin Bay off Vladivostok and the Western Pacific. This is Eastern Asia, Western Pacific. Okay, I don't know what's going to happen with the yen. They're on QE to infinity, are they not?
Yep.
And they've been there ever since we stole their $1.2 trillion government pension fund. This is what America does. This is what the United States does. We make sure that you're under our thumb, and then we steal your savings. And that way, people ask me, Jim, how did the U.S. Treasury bond make another year? How did the U.S. dollar make it another year? Well, easy. We stole Japanese $1.2 trillion. That's a whole year and a couple months of the U.S. government deficits. Aren't you paying any attention to what's going on I know I read about that, but I didn't know any about the details. The details, we stole a year of U.S. government deficit funding. Okay, regarding Kuroda, I mean, golly, what a clown.
Yep.
QE to infinity was announced formally using the word infinity. How can they ever save the yen?
Yeah, right.
I think the Japanese are working feverishly to accumulate gold to make sure they can participate in the Eurasian trade zone. They're making deals with Russia to make sure they have energy provision, making deals with China to assure continued... Okay, this is a very important point not talked about much. What Mexico was to the United States with offshore industrial development, China was to Japan for outsourcing their industrial output at a lower cost structure. China and Japan are commercial buddies, and the U.S. is trying to get them to fight over islands. Just a quick aside, I have a client named Jerry. He lives in Hong Kong, and he said, Jim, I have an excellent story to tell you. I'll be quick. He said, my doorman at my building has a son. We were just talking, and he told me that his son is paid $200 a week to carry a placard, yell things, and throw shit at the demonstration against the Japanese over the island dispute, and he told me the U.S. government is paying his son.
Gosh.
Okay, you know, this is a nice switchboard I have, folks, at the Jackass Central for the Hat Trick Letter. Sometimes my clients in Hong Kong tell me things.
Yeah.
They also tell me about incredibly high rent prices.
Well, yeah.
But they also tell me that they're going to keep this peg as long as possible with the dollar, Hong Kong dollar, U.S. dollar, because there's a lot of money coming in from the mainland China, into the Hong Kong banks. Okay, I expect Japan is going to be a wrecking zone until they join the Eurasian trade zone, which it appears they've already begun to do. Making nice with Putin with a sequence of meetings where they agree not to fight over the islands. They didn't agree to resolve it. They agreed not to fight.
Right.
It's a major point. Okay, there's a messy zone over there. We're not going to go there. The U.S. is going to push us there. We're not going to go there. Okay.
All right. I've got, Jim, six or seven questions, but I've only got about 15 minutes left. I hate to have to rein you in, but we got to do these about 2 minutes apiece. You ready?
Go.
If it's possible. This comes from Russ. I actually did an interview with Dr. Jand over the weekend, and Dr. Jand's theory was that the powers that be allowed Brexit to pass so that they can blame the coming crash on the common people and say, look, see, this is why you need us. This is why we got to hold it all together. What do you think of that?
It could be. So what? Next question.
All right. Fair enough. Dirt. I like this. Dirt Reynolds. Dirt Reynolds wants to know, would engaging the, quote, super note, unquote, discrimination via electronic means for the rest of the world not instantly create a shice dollar?
What's a super note?
I guess that's a super SDR, you know, like you talked about the idea.
Okay. Maybe a super sovereign note based on the IMF basket of currencies.
Yeah, let's go ahead.
Will that render the dollar, what did he say, will that render the dollar useless or worthless?
Immediately make the pathway for the two-headed dollar, the international dollar and the shice dollar.
Yes, it will, especially if they do a gold backing of it, because that will force the United States to do a gold backing of a currency. It will also remove the dollar as the world reserve currency. The important thing to note about the super note, or super sovereign, I call it, super sovereign currency bond, is that it will replace the dollar. It will replace the treasury bond in global banking systems. And anytime you do that, you will force the United States to come up with its own dollar for domestic use to guarantee shipments into the ports, a point I repeatedly make. All these international issues are fine and good and interesting and full of intrigue. The big issue for the United States economy is, how do we guarantee the ships will unload and be properly paid? Yes.
Yeah. All right. Next one comes from Sanford. This is a fun one. You'll like this. Hello, Jim. Whom do you suspect has been responsible for all of the recent oil-related accidents, such as train derailments in the U.S. and Canada?
Wall Street banks, Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan, done by the FBI.
And why?
And Langley folks. I mean, whatever the FBI can't do, and they'll just hire Langley folks to do it. There have been a lot of accidents regarding oil, and there have also been some games being played regarding oil accounting. Oh, look at that. We don't have that extra million barrels a day. That was wrong. Okay, it's all accounting games. U.S. and Wall Street and U.S. government, they're experts at bullshit accounting games to make things appear or disappear.
What and how about, does it benefit? Can you explain how it benefits the banks to cause these accidents? I'm sure you can.
Oh, sure. It's to lift the gold price. I lift the oil price. We're back toward 50 in a V recovery. And it makes some of the oil portfolio, the oil sector portfolio loans, it makes them less insolvent, less red ink for the big banks. Exactly. Big banks are desperate to get the oil price back to 70 or 80, and I don't think they're going to succeed. I think we're going to have a very big battle at 50, and the derailments are going to stop. Publicity is going to come for all the floating oil inventory and tankers. I think there are about 200 of them in Singapore. I've got a Singapore client. Yeah. So the big banks are trying to lift the oil price so that they don't have to declare insolvent and broken. What's the word? Default. They don't want to declare in default a lot of their credit portfolio. Loans.
I want to add here, Jim, because we talked about this on the site here a couple of months ago. There was a story that Zero Hedge wrote that everybody should recall, and if they can't recall, go back and look it up. When gold reversed, or in gold, when oil reversed rapidly in a huge short squeeze, it was done through manipulation of the gold ETFs, and just like how they manipulate the stock market through the VIX. And manipulating the VIX ETFs. They jammed oil back higher, and then all of a sudden, as soon as oil got up back toward 40, there came all these secondary offering filings of some of these companies that were on the brink of going down the tubes. And all of these companies had debt obligations to their investment bankers. So the banks were holding the bag on all these companies' debt that were going to zero. They goosed the crude oil price. That allows these banks to do a secondary offering of equity and then take the proceeds from the equities that they offered secondarily to the market and pay off the banks. Pretty slick, huh?
Oh, very slick. They call them revolver credit lines. And J.P. Morgan and a couple other banks were accused of doing secondary issuances, and not a dime of the issuance proceeds went to the company.
Exactly.
In other words, the investors thought that they were going to enrich the company and expand on some projects. Well, no, it just went to Wall Street banks. So the banks are doing a really nice circle jerk here. It's called self-dealing. Goose up the oil price. Enable some of the new issuance. You said it a lot better than I could have. I've explained this before, though, in other interviews from a month ago. So the banks push up the oil price, bring about new funding, and it goes right back to the banks.
Right, exactly.
So the banks are helping themselves by lifting the oil price. All right, let's move on to the next question.
Two left. One from Jill just wants to know if you fiddle around with this stuff, because I know I don't. But we recognize that GSR is out of whack due to all of the, you know, what the paper markets have done to silver. So the GSR is 70-some-odd to 1. You talked about going to 15 to 20. Do you fiddle around at all and, like, therefore massage the percentage holdings of your gold and silver? Or do you just, like, that's not something you want to take the time to or have an interest in doing?
No, you don't play games. In fact, there's a big I think a rule of the day regarding investment in gold and silver, you buy what's available.
Yeah.
And if it's not available, you try to buy more of that.
Yeah. Good point.
If the silver is not available and you got to wait for it, look for a second source. Don't say, "Well, I'm going to turn to gold." I know it sounds backwards. You don't buy what's going to be available. You'll work harder to buy what's not available. I don't pay any attention, really, to the gold-silver ratio. You told me it was 70 to 1, 72 to 1. If you had told me, "Jim, make a guess," I would have said, "I don't know, 58, 60. I don't care what it is. Okay, I don't adjust. I will say this. I've gotten a question at least 200 times. What allocation should I have for gold and silver? And I say, I'm talking about bars and coins, not stocks for mining.
Yeah.
Because often if you think you're doing silver mining stock, you're doing zinc as much as you are silver, because that's their byproduct.
Sure.
The answer I give them is 80% silver, 20% gold. I asked the voice a year ago, "What are you telling your clients?" And he said, "Jim, I'm in your camp. You're very much in the same." And I said, "But what are your numbers?" And he said, 90% silver, 10% gold. Don't worry about the ratio. Just try to get all the silver you can.
Fair enough. All right, and lastly, before we get to the final four and wrap up, and again, Jim, thank you so much. People are just going to love listening to this, and it has been extraordinarily valuable. Last question from Bill, right in the Jackass wheelhouse, specific area of expertise. What's the best way to get gold coins out of the country, and what country should they go to? Is Panama a good choice?
I'm not an expert in getting gold out of the country. No. I tell all my clients, never move with it.
No, I know what I mean. Well,
never move.
Address that.
I don't know what you're asking.
I'm just saying, where's
the best place to buy it?
Yeah, that kind of, or where's the best?
I don't know how to move it.
Yeah.
I don't know how to move it, Craig. So what's the question?
Where's the best place to hold it? Where's the best place to expat yourself? I guess that's what I was getting at.
Okay. I'm not really sure about Panama. Panama might be good. I heard 2 years ago that they've got a European-style depository that was a stage 3 type depository that was built by Germans living in Panama City. And if you think there aren't many, you're dead wrong. When Germany beat Argentina, this was, I think, 2012 or no, 2010 World Cup. That was it. I was in Panama during the game of Germany versus Argentina, and Germans kicked their asses 4-0. And all over town are these nice cars sporting a German flag running around town all evening. Okay, lots of German. The point is that the Germans and Europeans in Panama City got pissed off at the fraud, the thefts, and rehypothecations in the Swiss bullion banks, and they set up a pretty good facility that a couple of my clients have tested out, checked, and visited, and they say, "Jim, this is solid. Panama's solid." But I think the best place in the world is Hong Kong. Hong Kong, here's a funny little secret about Hong Kong. They don't want to advertise what their capacity is. They instead want to say, "We've got space, we're always working on it," and what I'm hearing is that the big giant Hong Kong vault facility for gold and silver bars next to the airport has a capacity of 10 times of what they say.
How about that?
And they are solid as a rock. You're not going to see a bunch of client information end up in the U.S. government hands, because Hong Kong, here's another little secret, Hong Kong officials hate Washington's guts, because the Bush and Clinton boys, and with Rubin, that was the primary destination of tungsten-laced gold bars. Hong Kong banks were the biggest victim, thousands of fake gold bars were sent to Hong Kong. Rubin and Papa Bush were in charge of the project.
How about that?
They used the same Panama narcotics shipping logistic routes. I was told by the Voice in 2010, do not mention one word regarding the interrelationship of tungsten gold with cocaine. Not until I tell you it's okay. It's that dangerous information. He told me a year later, you're okay to say it now. So that was 2010 and 11. I couldn't talk about it. Hong Kong is a great place. Great place. Are there other great places besides, I wouldn't call Panama great. It's potentially very good. Hong Kong is great and without a rival. Singapore might be good, but they don't have the depository bond agreement. And what that means is the bullion bank is not a sovereign nation on the Singapore site. In Hong Kong, it's a sovereign nation at the bullion bank that does not take orders from the Hong Kong government.
The vault is like Vatican City.
Exactly.
Fair enough.
And they follow the rules and regulations of their own leaders, board members, owners, stockholders, etc.
Wow.
All right. Which means in Singapore, some little dipshit, you give him $100, he works for the Singapore government, he can get access to your information and send it on to J.P. Morgan, and it ends up in the U.S. government information bin, and then you get a call from the U.S. Treasury.
Not in Hong Kong.
Department of Treasury. Yeah.
Well, all right, my friend. It is time to wrap up. This has just been extraordinary, and for everybody that has enjoyed this, what are we, 2 months away from Labor Day? So, God willing, we'll get a chance to do this again soon. But as we wrap up, you know what the tradition is, Jim. We got the final four, just four quickies, just to kind of...
Okay, and a quick fire answer, okay? I'll make it really short.
All right, it is, as everyone is listening to this, the 4th of July weekend here in the States, which means baseball, hot dogs, and apple pie. So, my friend, question number one, you are at a barbecue. Do you prefer a hot dog or a cheeseburger?
Neither. I prefer a breast of chicken on the Barbie. I don't eat hot dogs. I don't eat hamburgers. I've had maybe about three or four hamburgers in the last 10 years.
Okay. All right.
Chicken. Barbecued chicken.
Come dessert. Are you hitting the...
Barbecued shrimp also.
Okay. Come dessert. Are you...
And salmon steaks. I like salmon steaks on the Barbie.
Dude, we're talking 21st century stuff now. I mean, I'm talking old time, hot dogs and cheeseburgers. All right, so the next question.
Never touch them. That's why I'm not a fat hog.
That's right. All right. At dessert, would you touch apple pie or cherry pie?
I like them both.
But if you can only have one?
No, I like them both.
All right, okay.
I'll have both.
Then at sunset, there's a fireworks show. Do you enjoy the ones that go up and go boom really loud, or the ones that go up and then shoot out sparks everywhere that crackle?
I like the ones that I saw on Carnegie Mellon. I used to see it every spring fair in Pittsburgh. They had a wonderful carnival, and at the conclusion, they would have about an hour of the ones that exploded like a little mushroom or a flower that weren't real loud. And they saved all the loud ones for the finale, and I tell you, it just rocked your ass.
So the loud ones?
They had about 50 consecutive loud ones that went on for 5 minutes, and you just looked around your friends and went, wow! I like the finale to be the big loud ones.
All right, and you mentioned Pittsburgh. The Penguins won the Stanley Cup. Which will be the next Pittsburgh-based professional sports team to win a so-called world championship, the Steelers or the Pirates?
This is kind of funny. I didn't know that the Penguins won the Stanley Cup. I'm not interested in hockey. To me, hockey is a fight over a puck that ends up accidentally with the score at the end.
Right.
I follow soccer, football, baseball, and basketball. I don't give a shit about hockey. The next Pittsburgh champion, it could be the Penguins again. It could be the Steelers again. I think the Steelers are going to go through a dry period of several years because they had a massive amount of departures and free agencies.
Yes.
And I was amazed that they went as far as they did. They lost to Denver in playoffs after making it, a little bit of the ways. The Pirates will not go anywhere. They're a minor league team that's doing pretty well under good management and good draft scouting. The Pirates have always had a very good farm system. But once a player gets too good, like McCutchen, I'm amazed that he is still working with the Pirates. Why doesn't he go out and get a real contract that can double his salary? The Pirates can't pay like the competitors. It's a small market. It's a metropolitan 2.5 to 2.25 million people. The inner city is 450,000. It's a small Pirate stadium. They have a very small cable network system for the Pirate games. And the joke I love to report is that the entire Pittsburgh Pirate income stream is less than just the New York Yankee radio. So where are they going to be able to compete? Now, it'll be the Steelers if they're lucky, but I think it'll probably be the Penguins. If you're telling me that the Penguins are really good, well, fine. I couldn't care less. I don't know anything about them. I couldn't name two players. They've got a guy from Canada that was really good, and the Canadians were telling me, oh, gosh, Jim, the Penguins just signed so-and-so. And I said, who's that? I don't know, and he turns out to be like a most valuable player. I don't know. No, I don't like hockey. I think they don't enforce the fighting very well. There's too much dumping of the puck in the corner. I just don't like. I don't really like the two line rule. I used to skate a little bit in Boston. We used to go out on Fridays and get six or eight of us to go out skating. I wasn't very good, but I was athletic, so I could pick it up a little bit. And it was so much fun being on the end of a whip. And I went flying a couple times into the boards, and I banged my ass a little bit, hurt my shoulder once a little bit. But I like ice skating. I don't care for hockey. I like soccer. I played 2 years in high school. I was a left wing 1 year, and I was a left halfback the other. I much preferred left halfback. This place went nuts for soccer in July of 2014 when Costa Rica beat Italy. Unbelievable. Italy with 60 million people in Costa Rica with six.
Yeah.
Anyway, I love the Steelers, but I think that they've got a weak manager, and their general manager has been making some bad decisions. But now we've got so many lost through retirement and free agencies that they got to rebuild the team. And now I don't think the defensive secondary is all that great for the Steelers. And Denver sure proved that.
Yeah.
They passed at will.
Well, all right, my friend, I've got to call it a day and call it a wrap. But before we go, like I said, in 2016, you're flying blind without your regular jackass. Go to goldenjackass.com, and you can find the hat trick letter there. And I encourage everybody to strongly consider buying yourself a gift of a hat trick letter subscription. Jim, how would you just real quick describe it and what do they get at the hat trick letter?
Well, it's on www.goldenjackass.com. In April, it was a 12-year anniversary. I got a public page in there that I always put up the links. I get people sending me emails saying, Jim, when is your next interview? Or where can I find some of your recent interviews? That question bothers me a lot because I spend time updating the main public page that shows the links for recent interviews like yours, like another one just 2 days ago. So go into the public area, look at some of the free material. If you're new at this, come up to speed a little bit, read up a little. This is very difficult at times. It's difficult to understand how policy in the U.S. is wrecking our economy, how policy at the Fed is wrecking our monetary system, and the whole world is coming against the United States because we're full of fraud and counterfeit, and we're following up our fraud and counterfeit with war. So it's a 1-2-3 punch to kill the dollar, and we're going to have a tremendous isolation of the United States with us recognized and called, labeled, and quarantined as a rogue nation. That's coming. But sign up for the Hat Trick Letter. The two main reports are the Global Money War Report, focused more on the dollar, and the second is the Golden Currency Report, that's focused on the currencies and, you know, mint demand and silver issues and Shanghai stuff and COMEX silver and all that stuff. Anyway, sign up. The two favorite compliments I get, and I got another one yesterday of this type: I've been listening to your interviews for a long time, and finally I signed up, and I wish I hadn't waited. I got that compliment just yesterday. The other one I get it a lot, quite a lot. I was a subscriber for a few years, but I backed out in 2013, and now I'm back, and I don't know why I ever left, because I can't find this information elsewhere. I get bits and pieces, but you tie it together, and you bring a lot to the table. And I give a lot of credit to my colleagues and about 20 different news hounds. Helpful to me. Very helpful. And I'm very happy. Like, I got a Singapore contact named Sharon, and she's just wonderful. It's not just Singapore issues. It's stuff about China setting up shop in Singapore. It's about Singapore perspective of what's going on in China. About Singapore perspective about how Chinese are moving in to Australia. Okay, so sign up for the Hat Trick Letter. Very few people are dissatisfied with it. It's a labor of love, but, you know, Craig, it wears me out. And I get some requests saying, why don't you do two a month? And I say, well, why don't you start your own newsletter? I'm trying not to have a burnout. I've got 12 years and 2 months, and I'm not burned out yet. Got a lot of energy, but I know how to relax.
That's the key. I can tell you that. I feel the same way. Well, my friend, awesome stuff. And just really, really appreciated all of your time and all of your insights today. Thank you so much. I, of course, look forward to visiting with you again. But for now, again, I bid you adieu. And thanks for all your time, Jim.
The pleasure being on. You are one of my two or three favorites, Craig. We have not only an interesting discussion, we have a lot of fun.
Yeah, we do.
we're a couple of little nuts that fell off the tree, and we're not afraid to admit it. I mean, the jackass and a turd. Exactly. Where can you ever get that?
Exactly. All right, my man. Have a great weekend, and we will talk to you again soon. Thanks, everybody, for listening.